Now, for our first award winners, I have two of them in studio with me here. And it is essentially a group which came together, which was already formed, but came together with a plan to try and keep things alive in their community. And I'll just read the nomination for them. One of the many nominations that came in came from Fianna Fáil councillor Norma Moriarty. I wish to nominate the following people and group for their exceptional foresight, courage and commitment to the betterment of their community. Rather than seeing things as they were heading and accepting them, they believed in how things could be and led the campaigns to bring positive change about. I wish to nominate Forbert Nodromeda and Imrani Voracu and Sean Farley, representing the committee, for two very significant milestones achieved by them in the last 2 years. A, the purchasing of Ireland's first community pub and shop to ensure a social hub of the Drumhead area could remain open and provide that essential outlet for all in the community is worthy of an award in its own. B, coupled with the above, the same organisation and leadership sought funding and support to secure a community cancer car which had served so many families in the Ivra area at a time when they needed kindness, care and understanding. There's ongoing management and motivation as well as exceptional organisational skills required to operate both the pub and the car, and the commitment from Emer and Sean and their committee has ensured that operational standard is maintained. I'm deeply honoured to make this nomination and wish the committee continued success in the years ahead. And that is just one of the nominations that we received for Forbert Nodromeda, and Emer and Sean are with me in studio. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Jerry.
Thanks for journeying in this morning here to us in Tralee. Listen, first of all, congratulations. And Emer, if I can start with you, you're Bonnisdore. Take me back to, I suppose, the start of the year, really, because it was February 1st kind of announced that this is what you were hoping to do.
Yeah, good morning, Jerry, and thanks very much for having us, and thanks to Norma for the nomination as well. I suppose it's been a bit of a whirlwind, to be honest. You know, I don't think it was anything that Forbert Nodromeda ever had in their sights, the idea of taking over a pub and a shop, but it became very apparent, you know, at the end of last year that in order to retain the pub and shop, Humphrey and Noreen had wanted to retire, and, you know, in order to retain it, that we had to do something, and I suppose something kind of fast, and to try and ensure that we retain the service. So the idea is lovely in principle, but, you know, how
is it going to work? How are you going to do it?
Yeah. So anyway, we set off about our GoFundMe campaign, which we were just absolutely thrilled with the level of response and support that we got. And I suppose that it'd have to be something that we're very cognizant of. Without all the people that came behind us to help us, we wouldn't have the Eanie Tavern, Thorn and Heena now as it stands. So we are exceptionally grateful to everybody.
Yeah. Sean, tell me about some of the hurdles that you had to get over from the conception of the idea and the plan to...
Well, I suppose, obviously, the committee, our directors, we had to discuss it at length. And, you know, the fact that if we lost the pub and the shop, then what would it mean to the community? We had, you know, an idea because of COVID. The pub and shop were closed for a year and a half.
So you had a dry run of exactly what it's going to be like.
Literally, well put there, Jerry. Yeah. So that was an incentive, to be fair. So it was a bit of a no-brainer. You know, rural Ireland is suffering. And we just got our heads together. But obviously, we had to negotiate with Humphrey and Noreen. They, of course, had no interest up to that point. And when we approached them then, they were very keen that it would work for both parties. And so we worked well together behind the scenes. But I suppose we had applied for a loan, and we were granted, but there was a shortfall. So the idea of the GoFundMe was going to be a hurdle, but within a matter of days, we knew we had done the right thing.
Yeah.
The response was overwhelming. You had donations from a fiver to 5,000. You had donations from outside of the kingdom, people who could relate to the story. And then you had the diaspora from abroad, all got on board. So that was a huge incentive. So, you know, to answer your question, any hurdle after that was going to be...
It was clearable.
It was, yeah, because we had the backing.
Yeah.
And we knew we were on the right path then.
Yeah. Do you think people, both here and you mentioned as well, Sean, the diaspora, Emer, that they were getting on board because they, like, there'll be people coming home for Christmas now who would be able to go to the Inni Tavern?
100%, Jerry. Like, and it's lovely. Even today now, there's a group of lads, they're meeting at the Inni Tavern and they're having their breakfast there and they're going off on a tour of South Kerry, but they're beginning and ending their journey in the Inni Tavern. And it's so nice. Some of them are away, some of them are at home.
Yeah.
You know, it gives people a base. It gives you a place of your own, you know. And I suppose, like, you know, love of place, your sense of pride in your own place, they all come into something. And, like, I suppose Drummond is an area that I've seen a massive amount of challenges over the years in terms of rural depopulation, you know, prior to the foresight of those who came before us in terms of the foundation of the group. It was a greenfield site. Obviously, we're very lucky to have the support of Uadh Ros na Gaeltachta, who've helped to push everything through in many ways, you know what I mean? And, like, it gave us a village. We have a whole village of our own now, and the Inni Tavern bar and food store is a big part of that story.
Yeah.
Without it, it probably wouldn't constitute the village in the same respect.
Yeah, it's not just a pub, it's a social hub.
It is. It's a social hub.
A community hub, yeah. Which is the reason you did it.
Well, yeah. We're referring to it as a cultural hub.
Yeah. Yeah.
We hope to develop, you know, along that line.
Like when Jack and Mike went into that pub the first day, they had great nights there of set dancing and all that kind of thing. And, you know, I suppose the set dancing to a degree kind of declined a little bit. There on the 27th of December now, we're having a big night. It's like a Kayleigh Moore kind of thing. Christy McGarrett is going to us from Dingle and he's going to just lead people in sets and let them dance and enjoy it and have crack. Like, I never went to a formal set dancing class in my life, only hopped in behind and started dancing away. And that's kind of what most of my, you know, my group or my age group growing up would have done. So there was no, like, you know, anyone saying step in and step out. It was just try it, see how it goes. And, you know, I mean, there's great fun, there's great crack in that, there's great kind of idea of bringing your culture and your friends and everything together, you know. So it's just, it's very important for us.
If you, the fact that it's been kept going and now being managed, Sean, is important as well, because it, as I suppose people have seen other areas where it hasn't been possible for different reasons, and they've seen the effect on that area. So people, I suppose, knew what was coming.
Yeah, and of course the post office, the one in our area, we had lost maybe 5 years previous.
Yeah,
and we've been able to reintroduce a point where people can post their letters, buy their lotto ticket. So that's been a godsend as well for the area. So it's alive and kicking, and you know, it gives me the opportunity to mention Emer. I should be uncomfortable now, but she's at the helm and she's driving force. You know, her enthusiasm is very infectious. She's from the area, and you know, she flies the flag for Drummond. So it's easy to get behind somebody like that. We're just volunteers. Emer is front and centre, and I mean, there's a whole other area that she's working on as well, so you know, you couldn't not but be involved,
roll up the sleeves and get involved.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell me about the cancer car, Emer.
So the cancer car, Jerry, I suppose, is something we're very proud of as well. It's something that's really, it's greatly needed. That's the bone and bore of it, I suppose. The cancer bus leaves, it comes as far as Killorglin, and, you know, we're dealing with an area that then is about, you know, anything from 40 to 45 minutes, depending on where you are in the Iveragh Peninsula. So in our own context, we'll say Killorglin is half an hour from my house. But if you live in Valentia Island or if you live in St. Finian's Bay, then you're talking about 40 to 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're a person who lives alone down there, or if you're not, if you just have other family members who are working and they can't get to help you to get to these appointments every day, that leaves you with very limited options.
Yeah.
A lot of people ended up having to stay in Cork prior to this, you know, where they'd book in. And again, there are different systems and setups up there, which are brilliant to have. But people, we have found, by and large, they want to come home to their own beds by night. And so I suppose I would be very, you know, mindful to say that we are depending on volunteer drivers completely and utterly. Anybody that sits into that car and drives it as a volunteer, they're giving up with their free time. They don't get paid. In winter's morning, I actually drove it myself a day last week, and I was thinking to myself, you know, it was 6:30 when I left the yard of the centre. And, you know, you're going to collect whoever you're going to collect. And, like, those drivers are doing that day in, day out, week in, week out, for absolutely nothing, only for, I suppose, the satisfaction, the personal satisfaction that they're helping somebody.
Yeah.
And you couldn't put a value value in that. And simultaneously, we've had loads of people who've come together and have fundraised for it. This year now, Port Magee are giving us their Christmas Day swim in Cunnakeen Pier. Now, Port Magee's about a half an hour from us, but so many people...
They recognise the value of it.
They can recognise the value of it,
yeah. The whole area.
Paul and Mike Brennan presented us with a cheque through fundraising they had done in Port Magee last Friday night of €6,200. The O'Sullivan family drama rock, they lost their mum, Helen, last year. They organised a huge car drive. Ashling O'Sullivan, who's only... She's a third-year student in Colossian Ishkelliga, raised €1,000 for us. I mean, you know, so can you imagine, like, you're talking about an age group from 15 to whatever, yeah, where they can see that you're helping people and you're helping families. And so we're at the point where the demand for the car is so much, you know, we may have to try and investigate getting a second car. So we were that car was funded first day by the DRCD. But like all the running costs, everything else, that's all down to fundraising, and that's all down to, I suppose, you know, ongoing fundraising and that, yeah, kind of thing. But
John,
for the volunteer drivers,
is that the message, one of the messages from what you've done for other areas? And again, circumstances have to align and work has to go in, but you have to kind of be a self-starter. You have to raise your own money to try and get the money from outside or help from outside government agencies, the HSE, whoever it is, rowing in. If they see a community coming together, then they'll reward that by giving the extra bit needed to get things over the line.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Udaras, Nagueltukta have been there ever present, you know, and they're looking on. You have Anne-Marie McGarrett, she's our point of contact. You know, she's always there to help. And they have been there for the last 20 years, so we've been lucky in that respect.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the end of the day, it's down to ourselves, our local community, and the people that are prepared to keep our area alive and fly the flag.
Yeah.
And we have a lot going for us because we have a hostel as well that, you know, we're seeing a lot of people coming through there.
Yeah.
And of course, they're delighted with the... you know, a lively and vibrant pub, literally 100 yards from their bed.
Yeah.
So, you know, it all works hand in hand.
Yeah.
But one depends on the other. Great community spirit.
Yeah. Eimear, finally, I know there's a lot of committee members and people who are all part of this award.
A massive amount, and I suppose, Gerry, as well as that, the committee members, we have a board of directors of 9, and again, I suppose, I just want to say thanks to Sean and to all of them, because it's a job that people are doing for nothing, the same as the drivers, and sometimes it's tough, but then sometimes, like today, it's very rewarding, you know?
Yeah.
And I suppose that's one part of it. Then we have schemes who work on campus as well, the Rural Social Scheme and the FOS schemes, and like, you know, the value of the members of staff that work in them schemes, it cannot be stated enough. They do such an amount of work. Whenever you ask them to do something, they just turn up and they do it. And then finally, we have other members of staff as well, those who've joined us in the Innie Tavern, you know, Marianne and Jacinta within the organisation itself, I suppose our paid members of staff, as we call them, as in the personally the company pay. And you know, without all of those people making the show go on and take every day, you just wouldn't have it. But then again, like I say, we had an ICA party, the Drummond ICA, they run a Christmas party every year. That was about, I'd say, 3 weeks ago. And we 120 people, we were able to produce the dinner for them on site. It was brought to the pub, they had their meal, great day of dancing, they were there all day, and that was from literally the youngest to the oldest people in the parish were there.
Yeah.
And Gerry, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
If you don't go out and fight for your community in rural Ireland, particularly in today, this day that we're currently living in, it's just, you will lose services, and you just have to keep the flag flying. That's all you can do.
Okay, well listen, thanks a million for coming in. Congratulations again.
Thank
a well-deserved FEXCO Hero of the Year Award for Forward Andromeda and everyone involved there. My thanks to Eimear and to Sean. Well, our next organisation, our next group, received a lot of nominations and were selected, as I said, by our panel of judges, and it is the Dingle Unit of the Irish Coast Guard. And I have in studio in front of me here in Tralee, Officer in Charge Frank Heitke and also Deputy Officer in Charge Cara Leahy. Good morning to both of you, and thanks for joining us in the programme, and congratulations.
Thank you, Gerry.
Frank, if I can start with you, we were only talking to you in the programme last week when we had the 14 crew from the Spanish-owned fishing vessel Fastnet, which ran aground after an engine failure on leaving Dingle Harbour, and the dramatic scenes of that. And it underlined again, I suppose, the work of lots of different organisations involved in rescue. But for yourself, I suppose, you know, working in the Irish Coast Guard, can you tell me a bit about, you know, where it started for you, first of all? And the amount of work and effort that you put in to be, you know, in the right place at the right time with the right sort of help for people in those sort of situations.
Yes, Jerry, we're going quite back quite a bit. The service itself goes back to the 1850s, and it used to be traditionally a breeches boy kind of a setup. And so that meant that the local team that was there, they were part of the Irish Coast, the Coast Guard in the British service. That
yeah.
It was before the Free State was established. And those people for over 100 years performed rescue at sea, mainly with the breeches boy. So they had a facility to shoot a line across to a vessel and recover the people from that by land, by sort of a zip line, if you like, you know.
Yes.
Now, then in 1992, the state decided to upgrade the service, and they were looking for volunteers to join because a lot of the systems had become out of time.
Defunct, yeah.
And they started to introduce cliff climbing, search functions, and so on. And I personally myself joined that time. There's some three people left from the early days, and we started with rope work, cliff climbing, and we started training to have a facility to actually lower somebody down a cliff or to upsail down a cliff and recover somebody from the bottom of the cliff. So that was a relatively new situation at that time, and that service has developed since, has gone into rescue boats as well. So now you have something like 43 Coast Guard stations all around Ireland. They're all volunteers. The people on the ground as such. We are the fourth blue light service in the country after the Gardaí, the fire brigade and the ambulance.
Yeah.
So when you get into difficulty, so you dial 112 or 999 and you would be sort of patched through to the regional control centre, which is in Kerry, it is in Valencia. The divisional control is there, sits there. There's full-time people there. And they would decide what is the best asset then to deploy.
Yeah, and you're a key part of that asset. Just to underline, one of the nominations we got was from Nuala Moore, who got in touch with us and says, I would like to nominate the Dingle unit of the Irish Coast Guard. They are the community, they are of the community, and this makes their responses so valuable. They know their areas, their speed and their knowledge really adds to such great outcomes. The Coast Guard is made up of volunteers who give so much of their time. They're sacrificed to training, giving their time, and they walk among us. Yet they walk among us. Over decades, the teams have so much commitment to safety and ensuring that anyone who gets into difficulty in the mountains or on the cliffs, on the water, walking the hills and cliffs, that they will be helped. Some rescues and call-outs and searches can take multiple hours, but there is no judgment. We can often forget what happens when the call comes. They have to drop their lives, leave their families and head out. Thanks is often not forthcoming, so we need every now and again to remind ourselves to be grateful and make that gratitude into something we can see. They truly are worthy of this award. Dingle Peninsula is so much greater for their contribution. They are the everyday hero for all of us whose life is embedded in adventure. Dingle and surrounding areas are vast with cliffs, mountains, coastline. The group train, sacrifice, upskill, they risk assess on a moment's notice and work tirelessly for any casualty or any situation. That's just one of the nominations that we got in for yourselves. Carol, if I can ask you, Nuala mentions there the training and the work, and I know it has developed so much in the last number of years.
Well, it's true. The Dingle team, they have all of the peninsula of Cork and Greenagh really to cover. As you probably know, they do the boat, they do the cliff, they do search, and also we participate and help with medevacs. And yeah, there's a lot to be done really. But we've a great team, fantastic experience, their knowledge is amazing and their commitment is amazing. Between call-outs and training, they're all so dedicated. They turn up time after time after time. And also there's commitment on behalf of their families, because once we leave the house, somebody else has to cover for whatever we were doing originally.
Yeah.
Yeah, the knowledge and the commitment is fantastic.
Yeah, and without them, you wouldn't have that element of the community, the local knowledge. They obviously love what they do as well. And that's a key part. And you need that knowledge in the seconds that matter in a rescue.
That's it, because every rescue is so different and the approach to every rescue is different, and you're relying on these people all the time to give their best and look for a favourable outcome.
Yeah, and that's the important side of it. Frank, are you ever struggling for volunteers, or do you always have people who's willing to pluck their hands and get involved?
Generally speaking, people have been very good and generous with their time in a small community. So we don't tend to have a big turnover in volunteers. A lot of the people that we have are there for the long haul, if you like.
Yeah.
They're committed. Now, some people might come on for a period of time and they might their personal circumstances might change. they may find it wasn't quite what they expected.
Yes.
Because you don't really know what to expect until you really get stuck in and see the whole multitasking that is involved in it and the various skill levels.
Yeah, and that's a big attraction for some people, I'd say. There's great days. There's good days like we saw last week. There are days when you rescue hill walkers who are in serious trouble. Some people who have fallen. There's bad days as well, but that's part of the job. That just you can't get there in time, or the circumstances are that somebody isn't there, but you have to do that work too.
Unfortunately, there are those occasions, but we sort of aim as a business plan, if you like, and we always say to people if they're out and about, get into difficulty, if they can be self-sufficient for the first hour, let's say, the golden hour, we call it.
Yeah.
And most importantly, if they have a facility to call for help. In other words, when you're on your own, that may not be possible.
Yeah.
So if you're out on your own, it's always a risky business. But obviously, if you can... You can expect help pretty much almost guaranteed in most weathers that you will get a response within an hour, which is a fantastic service if you think of it. You know, whether it'll be a helicopter, lifeboat or whatever, if you're out at sea or likely like on land as well.
Yeah.
So the most important thing is to be aware of that, to be prepared and to be able to make that call for help.
Carol, have you similar advice for people out there, particularly at Christmas time?
Yes, just to take caution when they're out, and especially at the moment, the land is so wet, it's very slippery. So hopefully we won't have too many calls over the Christmas.
Fingers crossed. How many are in your team?
There's approximately 20 in the team at the moment.
Okay.
With a few new members coming on board after Christmas.
Okay.
But then also what I would like to express is our gratitude to others in the community. Our community is a great community, back west, and also the other agencies that help us out. For example, the Fire Brigade and also Kerry Mountain Rescue and all the paramedics and the ambulances, they are amazing. I mean, they've often climbed the mountain with us in order to treat a patient at the top. And, you know, that's invaluable.
Yeah, you're all kind of part of a jigsaw of safety that clicks into action when things go wrong.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, and we're all reliant on each other, and it is just, it's a fantastic community.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly is. Well, listen, look, guys, well done. It's an amazing achievement to be part of an organisation like you are. Like I said, many times people are too shocked to thank you immediately, and then they only realise afterwards. But we were delighted to get so many nominations in for your work this year, and to award you a FEXCO Kerry Heroes of the Year award for everyone who's been involved, and not just this year, over the last number of years.
Thank you very much, Jerry.
Okay.
Thank you, Jerry.
Frank, Carol, thanks so much. That's Frank Heitke and Carol Leahy of the Dingle Unit of the Irish Coast Guard for their dedication and bravery, them and the wider community of lifesavers in Kerry and the wider community of lifesavers within the Coast Guard unit for the selfless work and the sacrifice, as Nuala said, in one of the nominations that we got in. Delighted that we could recognise them this morning. Time now for us to meet our next FEXCO Hero of the Year of 2025, FEXCO Kerry Hero of the Year of 2025. And delighted to say we have Pádraic Casán from Lazelton on the line. Pádraic Casán of Casán Financial with me. Pádraic, good morning to you, and thanks for joining me on the programme this morning, and congratulations.
Good morning, Jerry. Happy Christmas to you and your listeners. I was delighted to get the call from you. Humbled as much as anything else to be even nominated. So it means a lot to me, Jerry, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a number of nominations came in, and no doubt, look, part of what motivated people this particular year, because this has been a story that's gone back many years, has been the People versus the Banks, the documentary series that you featured heavily in. That was a 2-part series, which played out on RTE, and it told the story behind the headlines of the Tracker Mortgage scandal, the biggest consumer banking scandal in the history of the state. one of the nominations said, I would like to nominate Padraig Cassan for the heroic work he has done on behalf of those who were victims of the banks and the terrible things that were done with tracker mortgages in the teeth of the last recession. Dedication, fortitude, and a very exacting nature, the person said, that Mr. Cassan must have to try and uncover and try and fight so hard against forces that were working against ordinary people. That's just a part of one of the nominations, Padraig. And look, when you look back now on that, that's how it all started, wasn't it? It was, you know, the wheels had come off the train. The train was going off the tracks financially for Ireland. There was panic about, and you had clients coming to you saying, listen, can you help me out? Something's wrong here. And that's how it started.
Yeah, I mean, like you and I, Jerry, have been talking about this for years, and I was always grateful to the station that helped in spreading the word further and to getting it far and wide, because at the time, it was, if you take it, when you're overcharging on a home during an economic period, it was so difficult for many, many people. And, you know, I'm obviously grateful for the people that nominated me, because at all times, it was always about the people. Even the title of the documentary that I was heavily involved in, it was the people versus the banks. And this was people who had their homes and their families affected at a time of deep economic issues. And when you add in then what turned out to be serious overcharging, and indeed some people lost their homes and some lives were lost and so forth, you know, I remember, like, my mum and dad, Lord rest them, they're both passed away, would have been chuffed today to hear this on Kerry Radio, because I remember my mum, when I was telling them first about what I was thinking of doing and challenging the banks and started in 2009, her comment to me was, I hope you won't get into trouble for doing this. And so it was more a concern of, because it was the banks you were taking on. And like, I never thought of myself as a hero. I mean, I'm delighted to be nominated as one of the heroes, because when I listened to the earlier recipients, this isn't one man that did this. I mean, there was an awful lot of staff and a lot of people that helped me out that saw, let's say, the cause that I was challenging was a good one. There was a wrong there.
Yeah.
And I believe that wrong should have been called out. I ran that infamous advert in 2012, and my God, I got absolutely inundated. I remember in 2013, I think it was 9 o'clock at night outside Killarney in a security hut, listening to a man telling me his story about the difficulty he was in with his mortgage, and he just felt, and he'd written himself, that it was wrong. Of course, he was told no, he wasn't being overcharged, but he was, and it ended up being overcharging somewhere around 56,000 euro.
My God. And wasn't that the element of it that kind of, I won't say took people by surprise, but this idea that, you know, financial institutions are big organizations, and even, I suppose, the financial crash, the very element of it, of that the banks kind of were always right, or they always had their eye on the ball when it came to money. And then we found out the emperor had no clothes. And you had to fight against that idea, like through mountains of paperwork, I'd imagine, to try and prove, actually, no, something has been done wrong here, even though it was denial, that you were able to uncover all that on behalf of those people.
Yeah, I mean, they became jigsaws, to be honest. And my office, even still, is like a mini Amazon. There's so much paperwork in it, because it was all about paper, and you got swamped with details, and you'd be reading and reading, and I mean, there was hours and hours and hours. And I mean, as I said, many people over the years have helped me, a lot of great, fantastic staff behind me, because one person couldn't have done this. I mean, I suppose, as I said, when I was thinking about this, I mean, one of the greatest heroes in all of this is actually my wife, who stood behind me in all of this and assisted me in the office. And we were kind of dealing with stuff, because banks had kind of they couldn't be wrong. They couldn't be doing wrong. And lots of people challenged me, going, are you sure this is right? And I said, well, they're going to have to answer a lot of serious questions. I've come to the conclusion that they are being wronged, and the customers. And as I said, it led to over 40,000 accounts being corrected. But behind all of those account numbers was a set of circumstances and a set of individuals and families and children who were being affected. And you saw some of the stories that were told in the program. But, Jerry, they were only a tiny reflection of the seriousness of some of the stories that I've come across, who the show because they were so serious and it would have impacted a lot of things. I remember meeting a couple and they were in Wexford. Listen, anytime you meet the children, don't tell them this house is rented because we've lost our family home. And they were the real things that kind of kept me going and saying, well, Christ, somebody needs to be a voice for these people. And I suppose going back to what my mum said, I hope you don't get into trouble. I actually started moving towards, they're in a lot of trouble here, banks, because not only was I challenging matters of overcharging, but we had also bailed out a lot of these people.
64 billion.
For 64 billion. And that resulted in additional taxes, cutbacks in overtime, public services in particular were affected with overtime for guards and so forth. And then on the other hand, they were being overcharged in their mortgages, some of them. So it was a crazy story that started for me in 2009 and became public in 2012. It was never public in anything in my life. And I think you and I have been speaking for, if you think about it, probably close on 13 years now.
Yeah.
And each time you get a little chink of light because, I mean, I was working all of God's hours in putting it together. Am I glad I did it? Absolutely. Will I do it again? I'd do it again. I'd probably go a little bit smarter about it because sometimes you question yourself whether you're, could this be the case? But you only had to meet the next person then who were telling you their story, and that gave you the fuel and the emphasis to keep going.
Yeah. Well, Pádraic, one of our nominators is Tom Harrington, Clash Mail, Con and Causeway. Says, my hero is Pádraic Hassan, Liz Elton, who took on the banks on behalf of the Trackers mortgage holders. And Pádraic, look, thanks to you. Congratulations again. And thanks for talking about us on the programme this morning. And a happy Christmas to you and your family.
I'm humbled at the award, actually. It's delighted. It means a lot to me. It's a pity I couldn't be with you in the studio. I would like to have been there. But and again, as I say, thanks to Kerry Radio for Foe, who broadcast me over many years, and that helped in the challenge as well, you can be certain.
Okay, thanks, Pádraic. The Pádraic Hassan there, what is on the line. One of our Kerry Fexco Kerry Heroes of 2025 is nominated by you, the listeners. Now we have our next Kerry Hero in studio with us here. These are the Kerry Heroes we're selecting this morning, the Fexco Kerry Heroes of 2025. Eight have been selected. We're meeting our fourth now, and his name is Joe O'Donoghue, founder of social action group Ratmore Social Action Group, and he's been nominated by his daughter Helen, who's with me in studio as well. I would please like to nominate my father, Jeremiah O'Donoghue, for a Radio Kerry Award, as he founded the Ratmore Social Action Group 50 years ago. And over that time, he selflessly dedicated his time to help and improve the lives of other people and to make other people's lives more beneficial. I think you would be highly deserving of one of these awards, and I would like you to consider potentially choosing him as one of the recipients. The Social Action Group provides a wonderful service to the people of Ratmore. Good morning to both of you, Helen and Jer.
Good morning, Jer.
Coming in. And Helen, listen, that's why you nominated him. You've seen the work that he's done over the years.
Yes, Jerry, I have seen the work that he's done over the years, and I've been inspired by it. And I was highly inspired to nominate him because he's my hero, because he has enriched the life of all the people of the community of Ratmore and the surrounding areas. And I just thought he'd be highly deserving, given that he set it up 50 years ago, and that would be a nice testament to his legacy.
Yeah, yes. Indeed. Well, Jor, good morning to you. Congratulations.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Now, to give and not to count the cost is your slogan on your website, Social Action Group Ratmore. Tell me, 50 years ago, did you have any idea at what it would become today and the work that's been done over those years?
Well, definitely not the way it developed. But I used to like discussions in history class and religion class, and I suppose I kind of posed the challenge to one class in third year: what were they doing for their community? What are they doing to make it better? And a girl said to me, "Answer, what are you doing to give us leadership?"
Right.
So I said, a fair enough challenge.
Yeah.
So why not? Why don't we come together and create some type of an organisation, and we'll see where we go from there.
Yeah, and that's how it started.
That's how it started, Jerry. Way back, yeah.
So it was founded to give young people that chance to undertake community work and make a difference, and that's like a key objective of the organisation. And throughout the whole thing, the housing, care for older people, the daycare centre, Meals on Wheels, laundry service, all of those sort of things. Did you have any idea it was going to branch out into all those areas? Or was it once you achieved one thing, you said, well, let's move on to the next?
All we thought about was looking after older people as best we could. I suppose it came from, we were discussing the democratic programme of Sinn Féin in 1905,
yeah,
and in his history class, and like it said that we should look after our elderly because of all the sacrifices they've made for the country, and that they deserved our support and gratitude. So we decided to hit on the care of older people, and you know, we started small. We contacted Eilish Ash, I think, in the Kerry, the Southern Health Board, and she said, why don't we go around and visit people, you know, offer to do services for them. And we thought we might be rejected, but then we hit on the idea of a laundry for old people, that a person would collect the clothes. Some people would say on a Tuesday and return it the following Tuesday from this a little laundry created by Sister Genevieve and the youngsters.
Yeah,
and it took off from there. Then we decided to do this and that on behalf of the elderly. So it worked out very well.
It has.
Project by project.
A lot of it happens at Chalk Isagon. That was 83 that came along, was it?
Well, you see, we'd no place first except the convent. And so we decided we had to build our own place. And like, it was a bit of a challenge, like, with no money at all, of course. So we shot the raffles and to make money, and we got help from FOSS in those days. And it came into being, a nice little bungalow-type building. And we had a place for youngsters to have discos and that kind of stuff, and also a sitting room where they could have discussions. And, you know, it worked out very well.
How did the housing develop then? Was there a priest in Killarney who had seen kind of what, was it Father Clifford?
Father Clifford, yeah.
Who'd been making house calls, as a priest does, and seen some of the conditions.
Yeah, and he did a survey of conditions of older people in the diocese, and he realised that there was a lot of houses that were very, very poor repair, and
yeah,
people living in poor conditions. So he came out to us and he asked us, would we think about doing something?
Yeah.
And then we said we would, and like for about maybe 5 or 10 years then we had a little social revolution where youngsters used come to houses and do a huge amount of cleaning and painting and whatnot. Like, there was up to 100 houses as was looked after. Like, as I said, some of the houses wouldn't be in great shape in those days.
Yeah. And then that grew into the need for social housing. So you get involved in providing that.
Yes, we said no matter what we could do for houses, people would still need for a better house, they'd need to go to a place that was a bit more sheltered and a place where people could look after them. So we saw that SNEAM at the time were the first group in Kerry to build 6 houses for older people.
Mm. So bring them closer into services, into sociability with each other, tackle rural isolation, all of those things.
Exactly. A lot of it would be that to be handy, to be nice for people to be living together and have all conversations, build up a friendship and all that kind of stuff. And so we approached SNEAM anyway, got great advice from them, and we said we'd have a go ourselves. Like, you couldn't go far wrong, because there's a huge grant, 90% of a grant to build the houses.
Yeah.
So I suppose all we needed was a site, and we were fierce lucky that there was a local farmer who had a site in the ideal place near the church, near the shops in that moor, and they were the two places that old people use most frequently.
Yeah.
Frequent the church. And so we got in touch with Ger O'Brien, the council. He came out and gave us advice, and we got an architect. He drew up the plans, and we took it from there.
Then you developed on, and you developed, it was in 2015, you developed the Presentation Convent into apartments.
That's right. Like, with the Millennium Project, after the first 6 houses, that was 20 houses.
Yeah.
So we were adding another few every couple of years, and then the convent came up, and we approached the nuns, would they give us the disused convent national school? And they came back after a day or two and they said, look, we would not like to just give you the nationalist goal. We would prefer if he bought the whole thing.
Yeah.
Or if we gave you the whole thing, would he develop it? We said, we'd be delighted.
Yeah.
So we turned that then into a huge amount of work had to go into it, new roof and all that kind of stuff. But we had four flats for older people and a big section for the nuns themselves. And the idea was when the nuns reduced the number, we'd take over more and more of the convent and just build more accommodation for all the people.
Yeah, and that's all part of it, I suppose. All part of it is you create a bit of a tradition, Ger, of young people getting involved. And then it became like a thing that was done. It fed into each other as each generation came up.
We did, I suppose it was kind of novel enough, really. But like, as I said before, it came out of the idea of asking youngsters what could they do for their community, and then challenging back, what were we doing to give them leadership? And like we said, the care of the elderly was something that was very badly needed.
Yeah.
So that's why we started with that.
Okay.
And that's how we got young people involved.
You know, from the beginning as well, aid abroad as well. I know you were involved in sending out aid in times of disaster. You collect money. I know you collected for a tsunami in Asia in 2004, 13,000 sent to Trocra. That's a big focus as well, thinking about the wider world.
Yeah. Well, that was something we always liked to give help to our missionaries. So we contacted certain priests who were out there and nuns, and like we said, we'd do something for them. So we'd have a faster Christmas and a marathon basketball game, and you know, we would raise a nice bit of money.
Yeah.
And I suppose the whole idea was that, like, the missionaries had gone out, and why shouldn't we give them a support, you know, by raising funds for them? And
yeah, that was all part of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen, Ger, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's 50 years of an amazing achievement. I know there's been lots of different people. Helen, is he very good at getting people to do things for him? Is that the secret?
I'd say that's it. All right, Jerry. Yeah.
Asking nicely, I'm sure, all the time.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, I suppose there's a kind of a knack, all right, isn't it? Like, but as you said, they're just asking in a nice way, and people, I suppose that's the one thing we should say, that we got massive support from the people of the community.
Yeah, in Rathmore.
In Rathmore, and the county, the HSE, the county council. They've been brilliant to us.
They have.
But then Sean Hurley, who was head of a CEO of the Southern Health Board one time, he said, I know if I give the money to that more, it will be used.
And that's the key thing.
Yeah.
That is the key thing. That's brilliant. A listener says, Jerry, ask Ger O'Donoghue, does he remember cutting turf in Lucy's bog in Bunard in 1978?
I remember it as if it was yesterday, largely because we made a big mistake. We cut the bank from the wrong side and it began to cave in.
God. Well, brilliant stuff. Ger, listen, congratulations and fair play to you and everyone involved in the organisation. 50 years of incredible achievement. And Helen, thanks for nominating him. And thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jerry.
Thanks.
Great stuff.
Much,
that's Jeremiah O'Donoghue and his daughter, Helen. That is Ger, the Kerry Hero of the Year, the Fexco Kerry Hero of the Year, one of our hero winners this morning from the Rathmore Social Action Group. Our next award winner is represented in studio by the man across from me. Before we introduce them and him, I want you to have a listen to this.
My lover's got no money, he's got his strong beliefs. My lover's got no power, he's got his strong beliefs. My lover's got no fame, he's got his strong beliefs. My lover's got no money, he's got his strong beliefs.
He gave it to David.
David
is going for
he's
a two
it.
Here.
He's got
yes,
it.
He
he's got it.
Yes, he gets a two-pointer.
No.
The kingdom. Now 44 gone. Now we have a game here. What a performance by the man from Kinmare Shamrocks. Ball to boot. Into the canal end. Hits it high. Hits it over the bar. The point for the kingdom.
Well done, Shawnee.
21 point.
And you said it.
And Kerry Hopley. Oh, Neil Burns. Went up above a man a foot taller than him and won that kick out. Kerry must put up to the sword here. He gets a side look at Paddy. Paddy's coming in along the edge of the square. Surely a chance. Fisted over the bar. Kerry are on fire. It's gone to the right.
Gone
wide. The game is all over.
That's
Billy,
it.
We're back, baby. We're back big time.
We're back. We certainly are.
Kerry, look, he's going inside the 45. Is he looking for David? He might take it on himself. He's looking for the run of David. David en route to goal.
Goal,
surely
chance.
A goal. Yes, 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 yes. A goal by a genius. The real, real style of the show. Over the bar, a brilliant point from a brilliant player. It's Kerry now, have 6 points.
Donegal, under pressure for them.
Paddy Clem will give it to David. David for a two-pointer here. Has he a two-pointer?
Yes.
Yes, yes, a two-pointer by David Clifford. Guy worked that brilliantly. 17 points to 10. 36 gone, Ambrose now. And they get a standing ovation as they go in.
Oh, second best.
Now into the space for that man at the first set. Ty Morley. He gave it to Killian Spillane. Playing it to the 16 in. Joe Carter. Joe is going to go for goal. Joe.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
That's
yes.
It.
Joe Carter. And Kerry. Up the kingdom. Joe O'Connell with a goal. 17 minutes gone. Up the kingdom. 126. Brilliant. 126 brilliant. For Kerry, 19 for Donegal.
I like this.
Brilliant
team.
Stuff.
That is that.
That is that.
Yeah, there you go. That was one of the songs of the Kerry team soundtrack of the summer, and what a summer it was for Kerry fans. And the reason why I'm playing those highlights is our next award winner, our next award winners, I should say, for the Kerry FEXCO 2025 Heroes of the Year is the Kerry team and management for bringing Sam home in 2025. Lots of nominations. One that comes to mind, and one that I have here in front of me, is from a listener who says that the Kerry team deserve one of your FEXCO Kerry Heroes of the Year awards because of the joy they brought to Kerry in a roller coaster year. With the new rules, they worked so hard, adapted, overcame incredible adversity in the shape of injuries and even defeats to go on a run that just blew away the opposition, including the All-Ireland winners Armagh on an unforgettable day in Croke Park during the summer in what became an unforgettable year for the kingdom. And with me in our studio here to accept the award on behalf of the team and the management is Kerry selector James Costello. James, good morning to you and thanks for joining me in the programme this morning.
Morning, Jerry. Glad to be here.
You must be getting tired of all the awards. I know a couple of the lads were up in Dublin on Saturday night for the RTE Team of the Year Award. Take me back, I suppose. Look, your involvement, you were asked to come on board this year, and I mean, what an incredible year it turned out to be. There was new rules, there was bringing new players in, there was the injury crisis which hit in the middle of the championship season. Take me back to that day in Meath when, you know, 122 to 16 points, injuries piling up, people were writing the team off saying something's gone badly wrong here. From what turned that around to what you're here now in studio accepting award on behalf of the team and management?
There was a lot of things really, Jerry. I think the first thing was some straight talking and probably getting back to basics. It was a good reset for us in that there was a lot of things we moved away from that day. So really it was just trying to get the team more solid defensively, and the lads knew we weren't done and they knew the gun was to our head and we had to pull out performances, and there was just a great appetite for work. They're very conscious of who they represent and they didn't want the year to end like that. So in some ways it gave us a real clarity and focus about the basics that we needed to go back to turn things around. And there's a lot of experience in the group, you know. Jack referenced the 2009 Dublin game there, the famous Dartle Deer Wigs game as a reference point where, you know, they were written off. So things like that are very useful that, you know, we can do this, we can turn it around. And we knew we had enough quality in the group. So it was just about working hard.
The year had been successful to that point because there had been a National League victory and there had been the Munster Championship win as well. And things were going well enough, albeit you'd lost a few players along the way.
Yeah, it had. I mean, we had a very challenging league that kind of went under the radar because our first game was called off against Donegal, and we ended up playing 8 games in 9 weeks, which was very tough. And we had a couple of long treks. We had to go up to Tyrone and up to Derry.
Up to Pomeroy. They took you to Pomeroy that day, I remember.
Yeah,
the highest village in Northern Ireland or something.
Yeah, so they were tough. And then, you know, making the league final was a real bonus to us. And I suppose the injuries allowed us to rotate the squad probably a bit more and get game time into fellas, which then served us down the line.
Yeah, and it did. And have we any idea of the work that goes into it, right from the year, from the players who came off to feel disappointed that day against Meath, but you had the work done. You were ready. As it turned out, a couple of weeks later, you peaked perfectly.
Yeah. No, the work that goes into the whole thing is phenomenal, and everyone in a voluntary capacity. And, you know, even Jack as a manager, the hours he puts into the thing is mind-blowing. I don't think it's possible to work in any capacity being an inter-county manager now. And the players are more or less professional, Jerry. They look after their bodies so well now. It's 24-7. But they do it because they love it. You know, as they always say, it's choice. You don't have to do it. So they just love doing it, and they love representing Kerry.
Yeah. When you won against Armagh that day, will you ever forget that one? The crowd, the Kerry crowd. There had been a call from David Clifford after the Cavan game. You knew you were going into it against the All-Ireland champions, and it was a very tough call, but it was responded to.
Yeah, I was actually, I think we were all quite relaxed that day actually, because we knew there was a performance in the team. We knew the players were ready. We had also the thing that Armagh had beaten them the year before.
Yeah.
So that was there as well. There was a great calmness and attitude about the guys that day that we were going to deliver a performance, and your fellow Ken Mayerman, Sean, he set the standard that day early. But the last minute of that game and the Kerry crowd, the lads all referenced it. It was something they'll never forget, you know. And it just, that connection then with the people at Kerry was very strong that day, and that carried us right through the next month.
It can be a cliche, like the fan is the 16th man or whatever, but you could just see it that day, the connection that stayed for the rest of the season then.
Yeah, and you know, it was authentic. It wasn't a fake, as you said, the crowd is the 16th man. There was a genuine bond between the players and the crowd that day, and that continued right through for the summer, and we definitely fed off it, you know.
James, when it comes to the management team, and this was one of our nominators said, look, I want to recognise the Kerry team, I want the Kerry team and the management team, players and management team. It is a big team, but you all have your roles. What was that like for you? What was the sense of satisfaction among the management team at seeing them perform that way and play so well?
Yeah, look, I suppose that's why you do it. You know, everyone, we've about 20 people in the management team, from our kit man Colm and our nutritionist John, and everyone has their role to do, and you take greater satisfaction from doing your job as best as you can and facilitating the players in going out and performing. And at the end of the day, we can't do anything on the day in terms of performance, but what can we do to help the players get ready? And then it's that kind of communal satisfaction from getting the job done, and it's a very warm feeling when it goes well.
Was there particular satisfaction for you as managers and coaches and nutritionists tonight in working with every player in the squad? Because this year really was a time when, like, was it Mark O'Shea was, you know, fourth or fifth choice midfielder at the start of the season, plays a starring role in the All-Ireland final, that those, every player was worked on, every player was facilitated, like you said, to perform when called on. That was must have been one of the most satisfying.
It was, but I suppose form doesn't die as well. Mark was actually performing very well. I remember we were over in our training camp in Portugal, and Mark O'Shea and Evan Looney were the two top performers. So
okay,
it's rewarding performance.
You were seeing that in training?
We were, yeah.
Outside
yeah,
words.
Absolutely. And then Jack has a great knack of just keeping things very simple for the players. He gives them three basic messages. So there's a lot of reassurance in that keep their role very simple in something he knows they're capable of doing. And Mark went out and executed that hugely. But we had 40 odd players in the squad. I think we gave 34 or 5 players game time in the league out of necessity, but that served us well down the line then.
Yeah, I prepared them for it. Mm. When you look at that, was it exciting this year for you as coaches, the rule changes, the new tactics, the chance maybe to express themselves? And so I think some of the players were able to develop their game as they went along in the year.
Yeah, I would
because
say
of the freedom of the rules.
Yeah, I would say it's something we did incredibly well as a group. Is that we didn't force it, we didn't kind of say we had the answers early. It was sucking and seeing as we were going along, and there was a noticeable change then in how the game was played when you got to Croke Park and the warm day and the hot day as opposed to the muck and rain of the league, you know? So I think as we were going along, we were learning from every game, we were watching what we were doing, and the players are incredibly good at seeing little gaps where they can add value to their own game, you know?
Yeah, and they worked onto that, and just that final day it all came together. That must have been just so satisfying for all of you.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Tyrone game was the one I personally was worried about because we had the High of the Armagh game, and the Tyrone have a good record of tripping Kerry up over the years, so that was a nervy one for me personally. But there was a great calmness about the All-Ireland final. The lads were relaxed. We had a good plan going into the game, and look, we got a great start, which obviously helps.
Yeah, it certainly does. Well, listen, James, look, thanks for coming in and thanks for taking time. Just one word, next year. And you're going to be asked from now on about what about next year. You're still enjoying this year. It's important to enjoy the wins, though, I'd imagine, before you think about next season.
It is. We've moved on a long time ago. You know, we've opened the net wide. I think we've 65 or 66 players on the books at the moment. So the great thing about winning is that all the young lads coming in are absolutely mad keen to try and make an impression and make a squad. So if we can unearth 5 or 6 players to get into our match day squad, it'd be incredible. And 1 or 2 maybe to disrupt the starting team. That'd be a target that we have. You know, and we won't get too far ahead. It'll be one game at a time. We've Roscommon come to town in 4 weeks, and after that we've a tough trip up to Ballyshannon, so that'll focus the mind fairly quickly.
The clock's already ticking in your head and Jack O'Connor's head and everyone else. Well, listen, James, congratulations. Thanks for coming in and accepting the award on behalf of the Kerry team and management, and well done on a brilliant year.
Thank you, Derry.
Okay, there you go. That's James Costello, a selector with the Kerry team. If you have a view on that or you have a thought on it, getting loads of people nominated. Dealey O'Connell got in touch and nominated the Kerry senior football team and management because they brought such joy and positivity to the county over the summer. Well done to all of them. Well done indeed. Now we're going to meet another one of our FEXCO Kerry Heroes of the Year 2025, and this person is somebody a lot of people have been following in terms of his progress and his hard work. He's a young North Kerry man, Anthony O'Carroll from Ballyduff, who was one of the leading names in motorcycle racing when he suffered a serious brain injury in a crash in the Isle of Man in July of 2024. He's been continuing his recovery in the Brampton Rehabilitation Centre in Oranmore in Galway, and with me in our studio here we have his mother Mary O'Carroll, his cousin Ella O'Carroll, and on the line we've got Sancha Elliott Regale, who is Anthony's occupational therapist at Brampton Rehab Centre in Oranmore in Galway. Good morning to all of you, and Mary, if I can start with you. You, many people, a number of people nominated Anthony for what he's been doing and what he's been overcoming, but you nominated him and you said this time last year he was nonverbal. He had his first piece of solid food, jelly. He wore a catheter and couldn't identify or tell us if he had pain. This year he's eating normal food, doing well with liquid drinks, doesn't have a catheter or a pad with the last month during the day, feeding himself, and is able to communicate much better. It's been some journey, Mary, for him, and he's battled really like a hero.
Good morning, Jerry. He has indeed. He's doing really well. There is a lot more to be done, but he has made amazing progress in Brampton since we've moved in July of this year, the 17th of July. Looking back on the year, I suppose it doesn't feel like a year this year, whereas I suppose in 2024, I felt every bit of it, really.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
But I suppose I've really kind of nearly wished away a lot of this year, because when you see the progress, you're waiting for next
week. You're jumping ahead.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. With the excitement of seeing the progress, hearing from his team in Brampton, the hopes and the strength and the inspiration he's given up there as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely incredible. And he's been good crack up there, I understand.
He has indeed. Anthony's wit is really big time coming back again. The mischievous, as one or two of them has called him, the cheeky little fella, it is, it's amazing. And there's other young people there as well. And the big thing about it with Brampton is they have therapy, group therapy sessions where it's fun and Anthony's wit comes out and they're doing the work without actually it being a job.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Which is a great way of doing it, great way of delivering
exactly.
that level of,
exactly.
of rehab. Makes people more enthusiastic and working harder, because it is really hard work, I'd imagine.
And it is. because I've seen even Anthony doing the walks, and it's like he'd be lifting weights where he's grunting.
Yeah.
And then he'll get a fit of laughing, but it is hard, hard work, and it's very tiring as well.
Yeah, yeah. Ella, good morning to you, and thanks for joining me.
Good morning to you too.
What's the journey been like for you watching Anthony, I suppose, and watching the family?
From the start, when he had the accident, it was mixed emotions because I have felt very sad and very worried for him because he has been through all my life.
Yeah.
And he gave me a lot of support and guidance and unconditional support throughout school, childhood. But I have always been him. I was been with him through the years after the accident.
Yeah, yeah. And you've seen the progress that he's made as well.
Yes, very good. He was very good.
Okay, we're gonna talk now to Sancha Elliott Regele. Sancha, good morning to you, and thanks for joining us on the program this morning.
Morning, Gerry, and thank you for having me.
Can you tell me a bit about, I suppose, the work that goes on at Brampton Rehabilitation Centre and what you do there and how Anthony has been getting on?
Sure, no problem. We have a multidisciplinary team, which means that he has access to OT, physio, speech, and then therapy assistance, psychology and social work. So he's getting a huge amount of input. But one of the biggest changes we've seen over time is how much more comfortable Anthony is in being himself. He's grown in confidence, come out of his shell. And as Mary said, you really get to see his personality now. He's got lots of humor and wit, and he really interacts well with people. And that's one of the biggest changes that we have seen is his interaction with other patients and with the team. And alongside that, obviously, there's been real practical progress in how he manages day to day. He's become more independent, more consistent, more confident, taken things that once felt really difficult. And that progress has come from a lot of really hard work and lots of determination on his part. If I may, though, just to add that the biggest role that we've seen is his family. Mary and Nilas have been there every step of the way, offering him constant support, encouragement, and their belief in him, I think, has really made the difference.
Yeah, that has an impact.
Yeah, huge, huge. You know, we have obviously the MDT, and I would, you know, like to give them a shout out. They've been phenomenal. Our whole team have supported him in therapy and behind the scenes. But therapy is only a small part of his day. His parents really have taken that therapy and allowed him to practice all those skills continuously throughout the day and when he's not here with us. And that really has made, I think, the biggest improvement or the biggest impact in his improvement in therapy to date.
Yeah, and that's social side of it, the fact that he's coming to himself and interacting with people, that's all good. The mental side is very important, as well as the physical progress. Sancha?
Absolutely. They go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. And therapy in isolation is not going to make someone more functional. As Mary said, that group interaction, even if it's just at mealtime or in the corridor or in a group session, is really inspiring to see other people and see how you can inspire them. And Anthony really, really enjoys those sessions.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely amazing. And Mary, that underlines it there, what Sancha is saying about the work that's done at Brampton and how it is helping.
It is indeed. And look, he had an amazing team in the NRH, but it's just the system is so short. It is brilliant in Brampton because they don't have to rely on our system for their staff or their therapists.
Yeah.
So hence, and also, it feels like a home from home, and it truly is. Everyone and has helped us along the way. We have support, not just Anthony from Anthony's team, but both myself and Nilas get support as well from them. Now, we've had support from some wonderful people as well in the NRH and Cork University, and I'd like to thank them, especially like Sinead Brosnan and Rory Connolly from Cork University. My social worker was amazing in the NRH, which was Connie Mullins. They have an amazing team. It's just, unfortunately, system is limited. And that brings us even, I would love, and that is my intention, to have Anthony home. But in the last meeting, we found out that the support is not in the system at home for Anthony. So if I were to bring him home now, it would be very selfish of me, because it would be a halt.
Yeah.
It would actually be a standstill.
A backward step,
he would be entitled to... There is no SLT, there's no OT, there is physio, there is a waiting list, because Cork and Kerry have only three on the mobile unit. And then when you would get it, it's a block of 8 to 12 weeks and that's it. And at this stage in the middle of Anthony's recovery... That's nothing to him.
No, he needs more full time and all of that.
More.
And that's recruitment and retention, an ongoing thing that we talk about all the time in this program here when it comes to the health service. One of our listeners got in touch, Violet, who said, I would like to nominate Anthony O'Carroll and his family. The guy is an amazing person who's come through a lot over the past year and a half. With the help of his mother and father and all to his family, it would be wonderful for him to be acknowledged. I'm not from Kerry, but from the north of Ireland, but I've followed his family, every step of the way. Please consider his nominee. And that's somebody who's been watching what's been happening.
This is a lady, Violet Marks, and she's part of the motorcycling groups. They have been another amazing support. There are people I don't know, I've never met them, that has reached out, and a very simple message and having that support behind me could actually change my whole thinking for the day.
Yeah.
I have to be so grateful for Anthony, because within his racing, he has given me the platform, but he's also given me like an extra family support of the biking community. Yeah.
Does that help, Mary, finally, that the fact that you're not on this journey together alone as a family? Anthony isn't alone because of you, but you're not alone because of that network, that community of people out there who are wishing the best for him and willing him on.
Absolutely. I mean, our own parish in Ballydove, oh my God, they've been absolutely brilliant. There is people from Ireland, they've reached me from the UK. They're everywhere. And that gives you, I suppose, comfort as well in the fact that I'm so proud of Anthony.
Yeah.
Because he has met so many people that are now support to me.
Yeah.
And it's just given me the insight that he has touched other people far away.
Yeah, he certainly has. Well, listen, he's a well-deserving winner of Effexco Kerry of the Hero of the Year Award 2025. And we wish him and you all the best in the continuing journey. We'll keep in touch with you as time goes on.
Thank you. I'll just briefly mention before I go, some people have reached out to me. They're actually going to run the Cork City Marathon on support of Anthony.
Brilliant.
And have asked me about opening up the GoFundMe page again, which I was slow at doing. But I have put my pride aside. This is about Anthony, and a very good friend of mine, John Houlihan, and a lot more are going to run the Cork City on the 31st of May for Anthony.
And people that can go to GoFundMe and support them in their work to raise money for him.
Exactly.
Brilliant. Okay, well listen, Mary, Anella and Sancha, thanks so much for taking time to talk to me in the programme this morning about Anthony's story, a worthy winner of a Kerry Effexco Hero of the Year Award. Now it's time to meet our final Effexco Kerry Hero of the Year Award winner 2025. I'm delighted to say she's in studio with me right now. Her name is Marion Barnes, and I have the man who has nominated her, Dermot Crowley. I wish to nominate Marion Barnes for a Kerry Heroes Award 2025. In January of 2025, Marion was honoured at the Omega Epsilon in a large chapter celebration of nursing leadership for her contribution to nursing and for founding the cancer charity Recovery Haven. Marion worked as a nurse in the UK, Australia, Dublin and Tralee, and through her work as a stoma and breast care nurse, she recognised the need for emotional and practical support to be available in the community in a non-clinical setting for women who'd completed their treatment for breast cancer. She decided to set up a facility that would deliver caring and therapeutic services for those who'd experienced cancer, their carers and families. Her courage, vision, outstanding community spirit and leadership skills motivated her to establish Recovery Haven Kerry, which opened its doors in 2020. Good morning to both of you, and Marion, congratulations on this award. Dermot, that's only a little bit of what you said about her, but she's done amazing things throughout her career.
She has been an amazing lady, and she's my hero, and I'm privileged and honoured to have nominated her for a Kerry Award. I think these awards are wonderful, really. Jerry, it's great to be honoured in your own county by your own people, and I'm so delighted that Marion's getting the award today. As you said, she was awarded the prestigious European Award for the Sigma Award for her nursing, but her greatest achievement in my book was founding Recovery Haven Kerry. It's just a wonderful charity. I'm a cancer survivor myself and availed of the services there, and it's second to none.
Yeah. You got to see it firsthand.
I did. And what I find amazing is 15 years ago when she set up the charity, it was a daunting task. You can well imagine setting up a charity. She had to source the premises, to plan and coordinate a range of services such as counselling, play therapy, information and advice sessions, support calls and complementary therapies. Coupled with that, she had to ensure that the charity conformed with good governance, best practice, adopt all the required protocols, and of course, good financial management.
Yeah, and not an easy task.
Not an easy task.
Yeah.
So she's a mighty lady. And from humble beginnings, the charity has evolved and grown to what it is today.
Yeah, which is providing a brilliant service. Marion, congratulations to you.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for coming in. Were you surprised?
I was. Oh, it's an extraordinary honour to be nominated for the Kerry Heroes. I didn't know much about it until Dermot kind of phoned me.
Very
and
good.
I feel so humble, really.
Can you believe 15 years on what Recovery Haven has achieved done?
It has achieved an awful lot because initially we depended on volunteers, which we still do, but like it was run by volunteers because we didn't have the money only for the Ring of Kerry and Noel yeah. Hartnett. We didn't have any money. We bought the house all right with a group of committed volunteers. We got together and bought the house, purchased it, and then FOSS came on board and they transformed the house into a tranquil place to welcome people in. Then what happened in April or May 2011, they advertised for a nurse, and Siobhan McSweeney got the job, and she has done such a wonderful job since then.
Yeah. Was the key element of it, you were in the clinical setting obviously through your work, yeah. but you spotted there was a gap there. There was a need.
Yes.
Something needed to fill it.
In 2008, the breast services was transferred to Cork. Do you know, they have 8 centres around
yes, the centres of excellence, yeah.
And we had a great service going in Tralee, but then went to Cork. So I just saw the need that we need something locally. So I wanted to have something for the people of Kerry because houses like Recovery Haven, they have them in most of the counties around the country.
Yeah.
And especially in Dublin and Cork, they were the first two. So we just feel honoured, really, now that we've got it this far. And we want to thank the people of Kerry because without the people of Kerry, we wouldn't have the money.
Yeah.
And to take this opportunity to acknowledge everyone who's contributed in many ways and fundraised and everything. So without that and without the volunteers, we wouldn't be able to open our doors.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And Dermot, the staff in the house as well. I want to thank them because they have a very high standard there, and it's a wonderful place to walk in, and it's doing great work for the people of Kerry that have been diagnosed with a cancer, their families and carers as well.
Which is very important, the wider network. Dermot, it's going from strength to strength. The work that Marion started.
Last year now we had 8,000 attendances from a very humble beginning. It has evolved and grown to what it is today, and we've had amazing tributes from people that have availed of the services. They've been really delighted. They find it a great haven of peace and tranquility, and I've met people that have been diagnosed and they were totally traumatised, but they've come through it. You know, they were helped with their diagnosis, with their passage through treatment, and finally with their recovery. And it's a great
story.
That
really is what it's all about. Well, listen, we're delighted to recognise Marion, and Dermot, thanks for nominating her, and in particular such a coherent and articulate nomination. Marion, yes, finally.
Can we just thank Radio Kerry
promotion
during the year, especially with the bingo and everything, and we got a lot of money out of that with the other charities as well. And it highlights the awareness of Recovery Haven and how important it is. So thank you, Radio Kerry.
Okay, and thank you, Marion, and thanks so much for coming in, and well done again on that brilliant achievement. So that is our final award winner, Marion Barnes, founder of Recovery Heroine of a Kerry Hero of the Year, FEXO Kerry Hero of the Year.